Our podcast will be covering how the Nisqually Indian Tribe and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are together trying to improve the habitat of the Nisqually Delta and the process of turning it back into an estuary. There are usually three overlapping zones in an estuary. One is the open connection with the sea, which is saltwater, a middle area that is composed of saltwater and freshwater, also known as brackish water, and the third zone, which is a tidal zone, made up of fresh water from the surrounding rivers. Tidal forces and seasonal discharge of rivers cause the limits of these zones to change, and this increases the overall complexities of estuaries.
Estuaries are one of the most productive ecosystems in the world, so this is really an important project. Biological modeling also has shown that these two projects, this Braggot Marsh and the Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge combined, can actually double the salmon populations that reside and grow and spawn and eventually swim upstream.
The habitats at the Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge are undergoing a big transformation. The work you see will restore 762 acres of the Nisqually Estuary, 37 acres of riparian surge plain habitat, and 246 acres of freshwater wetlands. This estuary restoration project is the largest in the Pacific Northwest and is an important step in the recovery of the Puget Sound.
By taking down a dike such as the Brown Farm Dike and putting over 700 acres back into tidal estuary, we're reconnecting a system that was cut off. They've estimated that 21 miles of tidal sloughs will be restored to what they were.
Heavy equipment is needed to accomplish all of this. Although the land will be disturbed, it will heal quickly. The improved habitat will be more productive for the plant and animal species that depend on them. Invasive plants will be better controlled and native trees and shrubs will be planted. The tides of the Puget Sound will once again flow across the Nisqually Delta.
The scientists feel very certain there's going to be a huge positive impact on the salmon resources of the Nisqually Delta. Really, the bigger picture is restoring the health of the entire system.
Project construction began in July 2008 and expected to occur for 3 to 4 years, including the construction of a boardwalk trail to replace the Brown Farm Dike Trail, which was expected to be completed in 2009.
The Brown Farm Dike is our main trail system, so the public is losing 5 miles of a really fabulous trail and nature walk. To accommodate for that, we are building a boardwalk basically from the Twin Barns out over towards McAllister Creek and then up towards the northwest corner of the Delta.
Across the Nisqually River, we met up with Don Perry, who is the Salmon Recovery Outreach Coordinator for the Nisqually Indian Tribe Natural Resource Department. Don gave us his historical account of the Bracket Farm.
In the 1970s, this area was being considered as a garbage dump and a deep water port. One of those two, or maybe even both of those. Kenny Braggot, who was the landowner here, and his family, the Braggot family, for many years, Kenny Braggot refused to sell his property for development or for any of those other choices, I guess, that other people thought this land would be good for. Also, the same holds true for the Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge, which is across the Nisqually River. And the Nisqually River is just on the other side of those trees there. Back in 1974, that was the Brown Farm across the river. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service purchased that property. So it's now the Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge, and the Nisqually River ends right on the other side of those trees. It begins up in the below the Nisqually Glacier on Mount Rainier, and if you've been up there yet, okay, that's where the watershed begins. And this river, this watershed begins and ends in a national park. It's one of the only rivers in the United States that has a national park on both ends. In 1996, the Nisqually tribe approached Mr. Braggot to do a little bit of restoration work here, and he agreed to to let us remove one of the dikes that were across this, that ran across this open field here. This is an estuary now. These dikes were placed here over 100 years ago to stop the flow of tidal waters in and out of this area. And this was all farmland. This inlet right here is in its natural state. This was not disturbed. And in 1999, the tribe approached Mr. Braggett and asked him if he'd be willing to sell this land to the tribe. And he agreed that he would be. He knew that the tribe would take care of it in perpetuity and restore it back to its original condition, which we're in the process. We're still in the process of doing that now. So that was a successful project on 10 acres. So over 9,000 feet of dikes were removed from this open area that you're looking at. And there were borrowed ditches that were dug to build these dikes. And the dikes were primarily constructed to hold back the tidal waters. This was a hay field, and there were livestock grazing out here for years and years. In 2006, we completed taking the last dike down, and almost immediately we could see the results.
These results included better habitat for the animals, especially the fish that rely on the Nisqually Estuary. Georgiana Kautz, the Natural Resource Manager for the Nisqually Tribe, gave a more personal account of the Braggett Farm.
One of the things about Kenny Braggett, if you're on his land, you don't belong here, and you better be careful attaching to his land because we tie up to it. But I think his family and tribal people that have grown up together, that he had a lot of respect for what we were trying to do. He had watched over the years what was happening. And Kenny Braggett was very controversial in what he believed in. You know, they wanted to condemn his land and take it away from him. He said no, and he fought them bitterly. I think across the United States that people are reading about us and commenting about us, and it's pretty exciting, but I'm also glad to see other tribes are making those steps, because you don't want to leave behind something for your children that's not edible, the water's no good. There has to be a moratorium. Let's slow down and let's try to make the changes as best possible. And so that's why we work so hard with all of the people within the watershed, the land trust. They come together and help us to get money and funding to buy up more and more land. We're telling people, you know, to take a look at watersheds that have tribes on them. There are a lot of collaboration. There are a lot of things that's happening, because in order for us to get to salmon recovery, it's not going to be just us alone. It's going to take everybody within the watershed, the agencies, the farmers, the tribes, and Fort Lewis. Sometimes I do get angry about what happens, but I also know that I want to be positive. I want to move forward, and I want my children to have these same type of beliefs that you can do whatever you want, accomplish whatever you want, and that we'll be able to exist as Nisqually tribal members today, tomorrow, and forever.
The images you are currently seeing is a timeline of the restoration of the entire ecosystem. What is in blue is the current tidal flow, and what you see in red is the restoration efforts that are taking place. The Nisqually tribe and their connection to the land is setting the example for everyone on the importance of working together to support the habitat and improve the quality of life for fish, animals, and people alike. By working with government agencies and landowners, the Nisqually Indian tribe have been able to experience the land the same way their ancestors were able to experience it. This example of land stewardship is leading the way for the nation.